Good morning. I'm Rebecca Royce with Community Services. Is that loud enough?
Yeah.
It needs to really be in the microphone if you can do that.
I have a hard time standing in one place when I present, so I tend to move around quite a bit. And sitting is probably worse.
That's a portable microphone right there, isn't it?
I can probably stand here. That'll work.
Okay.
So I'm Rebecca Rice with Community Services, and we are here today, me and my manager, Michael Torres, are here to present the results of our community needs assessment that is conducted every 3 years. It is required to be done by some of the funding that we get, the Community Services Block Grant. We, at the end of last year, published the Community Needs Assessment Report, which hopefully you have a copy of, and if you've had a chance to read, it's fascinating stuff, I must say so myself. Requirement is to do this every 3 years, and there's some elements to the report that are required at the federal level. But the main reason, besides the requirement for the report to do this, is to collect and analyze data about the needs of our community that have low incomes. The Community Services Block Grant funding is to serve people or households that earn up to 125% of the federal poverty level. So the Community Services Block Grant is designed to serve those with low incomes and provide a grassroots effort, a local look at what the needs are of your community to make sure that the services that are being provided meet the needs that the people have, rather than the federal government saying this is what we should be doing with these funds. So we can customize the services to what are needed here locally. We also use this information to inform us for future funding decisions. So every 3 years we do a request for application, and those come to you for final approval. But the reason that they're prioritized based on the needs that we have found doing this community needs assessment process. We also send this information out to other funding agencies here in Clark County so that they can use this information when they're making funding decisions with their dollars. And then we also want this to inform policy and program decisions at our level, but also at the level of the nonprofits that are providing the services in our community. We want them to understand the needs of people with low incomes in our community and adjust their policies accordingly. So the community needs assessment, there's broken down into several areas. The first we talk about is our service area. So our service area is pretty easy. It's all of Clark County. There's other community action agencies that are multi-county regions. We wanted to give a little bit of information about the data that we used. We started this process in the summer of 2016. We took our time doing this this report. This time we really went in depth with all of the information, and we took our time to gather the information and go through the entire process, with a big part of that being a survey that we did. So the data that you'll see in the report all kind of goes along with the American Community Survey data 5-year estimate from 2011 to 2015. At that time, it was estimated that Clark County had approximately 440,000 people, with almost 50,000 of them living in poverty or under 100% of the federal poverty level.
What's the federal poverty level right now?
So in 2016, when we were working with this, a family of four was at 100% of federal poverty level if they were earning $24,300 per year.
How much?
$24,300 for a family of four. Yes. That's 100% of the federal poverty level. We also have some funding that we use that goes up to 200% of the federal poverty level, so we wanted to show that almost 128,000 people were living under 200% of the federal poverty level at the time that we did this report. So that would be $48,600 for a family of four. One of the unique things that we have here for Clark County is that we have both rural and urban centers in our county, in our service area. And in the report, we talk about the major industry sectors and the labor forces the unemployment rate and things like that. So that is all included in the report, but today we're a little strapped for time, so we won't go too much into that. We are required to talk about four specific demographics in our report. And we use that to compare to, in the report, it actually compares our population living in poverty, our full Clark County's full population, the metropolitan area living in poverty, the metropolitan's full population, the state, and the national level. So that in the report, it kind of gives all of that. But here, we just kind of do an overview. When we looked at gender, the gender is split evenly between the male and female, and it's consistent from the national all the way down to the very local level. We looked at age, and we have a similar overall distribution of age compared to Washington State, so the numbers in the different categories. But we did want to point out that Clark County's poverty rate is lower among those 65 and older and higher among children through age 4 compared to the total population. So more people are living in poverty as youngsters and less as adults compared to the full population here in Clark County. When we took a look at the race demographic, Clark County has a higher white population and a lower African American, Asian, and Native population when compared to Washington State as a whole. And all people of color in Clark County live in poverty at a higher rate than the white population, and that's nationwide.
So can I ask a question? Since you're pointing out one of these things under age, et cetera, back to the previous slide where 49,314 people are living in poverty,
mm-hmm.
does that include children?
Yes.
That's the entire family?
Correct.
Okay.
And then we also have to look at ethnicity. And with that, Clark County has a lower total Hispanic and Latin population when compared to Washington overall. And then again, as same as with race, when we compare those living in poverty, those who have a Hispanic or Latin ethnicity tend to have a higher level of, or be in poverty at a higher level than the non-Hispanic and Latin populations.
When you look at these statewide numbers,
mm-hmm.
like King County could really throw it out of bounds, you know, statewide, since they have so many people. They sway the average. Is there a way of taking like that county out and say, this is what we are with the state? Or
we could. We didn't break it down by county. We just looked at the overall state's information.
Counties, you know, just budget-wise and everything, that's a lot of times what we do is that, you know, there's them, you know.
We tend to, when we look at comparing counties, population-wise, service-wise, we tend to compare a lot to Spokane because they're quite similar to us, a little larger, but they also have a rural and urban center, and their populations are pretty similar to us. But when we look at the state, it's just state data.
Okay, so I'd like to go back to my question a minute because that was only part of my question. I'm thinking after I asked it. Wait a minute. Of course it includes children. Do you have it broken down by numbers?
In the report?
And children?
Yes. So all of this is broken down starting on page 12 of the full report. So
the
full report. And,
all right.
And it does. It breaks it down age 0 to 4, 5 to 17, 18 to 24, and then against populations.
So I haven't looked all the way through that booklet yet. Very low-income seniors who live on low fixed incomes, how are they accounted for in the statistics?
So they're included in the ACS, the American Community Survey data that's provided.
And where are they accounted for in this total, in these total numbers? Are they in the 14,314?
For
people living in poverty, does that include all age groups?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So anyone under 100% of federal poverty level is in that 49,000 number.
Okay. And a single older person living on Social Security could be in that group?
Yes, they would be.
Depending on what the amount of their Social Security benefit is. or they could be just slightly outside the group.
Of that number, yes. So okay. The American Community Survey only go, well, they actually go through, they have levels. I believe 50% is the lowest that they capture, and then 75, 100, 125, 150, 200, and I don't think they go above that. I think it's then everybody's above that.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
One more question on this, sorry. How is the income level determined? Is it based on tax returns? How is the individual, in the 49,314, how is their income reported and determined?
So
we know they're 24,000.
So every 10 years we do the large census where they do that. So every year the Census Bureau sends out millions of surveys across the nation, and it's an estimate. So they survey millions of people and then use that as their estimate for the full population. That's why it's called an estimate and not the hard numbers like when we do the 10-year census where everybody fills out that form.
So it's based on the box they check.
Correct.
I guess I have another, we'll probably milk this as much as we can, but the question I have, so this is a needs assessment. So let's say, almost off of your question, so we have a individual with disabilities living in a Section 8 home or something like that, highly really subsidized, really individual, which is good, but they're not making really money, so they would fit into the population of poverty, probably because of their income?
Yes, based on their income.
So the question is if you take them out and the people that are working on their own trying to survive, that's the people that we want to meet the needs, I would think. So is there a way to take, you know, like the retirees, the Social Security, that really the needs are being met, even though they're on below poverty, from the ones that are trying to
Our programs don't discern between what your income is. It's what your income level is. That's what it goes based on. So they don't separate out those earning from Social Security or SSDI or anything like that. It's based purely on what your income level is with all of the income sources combined. So the biggest part of our community needs assessment was a survey that we conducted in the summer of 2016. We released it on July 1st, and it went through September 30th. We distributed 6,000 hard copies of the survey in English, Spanish, and Russian. Those are our top three languages here in Clark County. And we did it online in English, and we did a broad distribution through many partners, over 65 community partners. We did news releases through communications, went through Twitter, Facebook, Nextdoor, those types of things to get the word out that we had a survey that we're doing. And the survey is titled Low Income Needs Survey, Clark County Low Income Needs Survey.
Do you survey homeless?
We surveyed everywhere.
Okay.
We went as far and wide as we could. We received 1,165 responses, which is outstanding, especially for community action agencies here in Washington State. So right now we're going to go through all the demographic information that we received so you can kind of get an idea of who responded to our survey. One of the things I wanted to point out is if you look at the title, it says age, and it will tell you the number of responses received in that question. None of our questions were mandatory because we didn't want to force people to feel like they had to fill out the entire survey. It was 6 pages long, so that they'd feel more comfortable actually filling out the information. The information was provided completely anonymously. And the first several questions are going to be answered by the person actually filling out the survey, and then they'll move into questions more about the family themselves. So the first question is about age. And here you can see that the number one response was that they responded that they were between the age of 24 and 44, followed by 55 to 69. We had 256 responses there. And then 45 through 54. And then we also had 75 responses from people identifying as 70 or over. We did have several people fill out the the survey that were unaccompanied youth. So that's why we have a number of 12 to 17. We have several responses from youth that are unaccompanied. So they are the head of household for themselves or them and their partner. The next question was, what gender do you identify with? They had the options of male, female, or transgender. We had over 1,000 responses for this question. The majority of them were female. This kind of coincides with studies that show that if you have a general type of survey, women are more apt to fill out that survey than men are. So we weren't really surprised to see this information, the number of women filling out this survey. Then we asked about race. So this is the only slide that you'll see that compares the population with the low-income population and our survey. We really wanted to highlight the fact that we were able to get the survey out to our minority groups throughout Clark County and had a good response rate from them to show that it was a broad distribution of our survey. The first two columns, you can look at those together, and one is the white category and one is non-white. Non-white is all of the minority groups together. And you can see that we had a higher response rates from, higher response rates in a few of the different minority groups than the actual percentage of population. And so really getting the word out to these minority groups, and a lot of them are very difficult to have them participate in this type of information. We then asked about ethnicity. And so the majority are non-Hispanic, non-Latin. But we had 95 responses identify as being Hispanic or Latino, 91 from the Slavic and Russian community, and 88 that said they didn't know. And we had 800 total responses for this question. Now we're moving into the questions about your family. So the rest of these questions are all going to be talking about the whole family the person is participant of. This one, I like to find trends when I'm looking at data, and I thought this one was kind of fun. So the number one response was one person at 271. The second response was a two-person household at 214 responses. The number three response was three people, and the number four response was four people. So it was interesting to see how the number of responses coincided with the larger families. Then we asked, what type of health insurance does your family have? We had 992 responses. And this is one that they could check is all that apply. So they could have multiple forms of insurance coming into their household. They could have children on Medicaid. They could be on Medicare, that type of thing. So there was 992 responses, but there's well over 1,000 actual different responses to the types of insurance. Medicaid was number one, followed by Medicare. Quite a few responses that had private insurance and several that said they did not have any insurance at all. Then we asked about the source of family's income. That number one response was earned income. So for this population, it shows that they are working, and that's their primary or one of the most common forms of income, followed closely by SSI and SSDI. So that could be social security for seniors, or it could be disability insurance. There was a few responses that indicated they were receiving temporary assistance for needy families through DSHS, pension, or some unemployment insurance. ABD is the Age, Blind, and Disabled. It's a state program for people who haven't quite gotten onto disability insurance but have a significant disability that keeps them out of work long term. And in the other category, we had all kinds of responses. We had some people that were getting from rent. They were charging rent in their house, alimony, selling their items, and things like that.
So you can check more than one box, I would think.
They could check, yes, they could check more than one box, and then we left an other for them so that they could put in other ways of earning income.
TANF, what is it?
Temporary Assistance for Needy Families.
Okay.
Yeah. They're cash benefits for very low-income families. So another way to show that we really got this survey distributed throughout the county was through this map. I thought it was the easiest way to kind of indicate. So you'll notice the zip codes are all listed here, and then there's a number in that area that is the number of responses from that indicated their last known zip code was that zip code. There is responses in every single zip code throughout Clark County. So we were able to even get into the areas that are very rural, like Amboy, the very north county, very east county. We're pretty proud of that. That was one of the concerns we had, was how do we make sure we get this throughout Clark County so that everybody has a voice in the survey of needs. We did have a few that came from outside the area, but you'll see there's very few that indicated that they are from the outside of the area. Then we asked about participation in armed services. We had about 23% respond that they did have somebody that had been in the military, with over 1,000 responses to that question. This was the first one that caught my attention when I was reviewing the data. I felt it was very interesting to see how exactly half said they had someone in their family had a disability or a special need. We did not define special need, and we did that for a reason. HUD has a specific definition that they use for special need, which could be somebody who's homeless or living with HIV or AIDS. It could be a physical or a mental health disability. So we kind of let them identify, do they feel like they have a disability? And answer this question. So we had 1,040 responses, and exactly half said yes. Then we asked about their housing situation. We gave them the options of doubled up, which means they are couch surfing is another common term, but they're living with friends or family on a temporary basis with no agreements that they could stay there long term. They could choose homeless, they could be renting, or they could own. The reason that doubled up and homeless are both the same color is because depending on what our funding source is, that's considered homeless. For HUD funding, the housing and urban development funding that we receive, literally homeless is what qualifies, meaning living on the street, living in a shelter. But for the schools, doubled up is also considered homeless. And so we just wanted to tie those two pieces together. Most of the responses came from people that are renting their homes, which is not surprising. But we did have quite a few that indicated that they own their home.
So did you go out to the shelters with this?
We worked with the shelter staff, and then they worked with the participants at the shelter and asked them to fill out this.
I guess I would have expected to have more people. Yeah, fill out the survey. 139 on any given night.
They didn't have to fill out all of the questions. So a lot of the first four pages were talking about what their needs were. And so a lot of them kind of stumbled and didn't fill out all the rest of it. The demographic stuff was in the back of the survey. But yes.
But you had 1,048 responses.
We did.
Yes.
So not like, yeah, you know, half of them only responded to that.
Correct. Yes, the majority of them. Barely a majority out of the 1,600 responses.
Oh, okay. Well, I've seen that.
The effort, you know, this really focuses on persons with low incomes. The homeless action plan update effort that Council for Homeless is doing, they're also going to be doing some extensive surveys.
Oh, okay.
That's really going to target the
okay.
population.
That's good.
Homeless.
That's, yeah.
So we will have some good data on that as well.
Okay.
The next question was asking if they had someone employed in their family, and 65% or so indicated that at least one person was working in their family, and that we had about 700 responses to that question. And then we asked about income, and this is where it got a little bit, the survey itself, we actually put those poverty limits with the number of households, the number in your family, at a monthly rate, so they could easily see We picked two percentage amounts. The 125 is because that's what the community services block grant, we can serve people up to 125% of poverty, so that's why we use those. And then we have the other funding that goes up to 200%, and that's, so those are the reasons we have those two amounts specific for our survey. When we look at the 200% of poverty, over 90% of the people that completed this question, which was 930 responses, indicated that they earned under 200,000 or under 200%, which is that $48,000 per year for a family of four. And then we had about 75% indicate that they were under 125% of poverty. So that's about $30,000 per year for a family of four. The other part of the survey that we worked on was asking what are the needs of your family. And the way we designed this was there are six domains or categories that we worked with. And we listed out several different types of needs that might fall under that category. For example, if the category was housing, it might be rent assistance, utility assistance, affordable housing. There were several needs, and they were able to identify up to three for the adults in their family and three for the kids in their family. The first thing we asked was, do you have a need, any one of these needs in this category? And this is the ranking of how the responses came from all six categories. Housing came out on top, which is not surprising, followed by health and social behavioral health services, needs in employment, followed by asset building, which would be bank accounts or maybe purchasing a home, education, and then support services is kind of a catch-all where it has those extra types of services that might be needed, like transportation. So what we'll do is we're going to focus on the top three, the housing, health and social behavioral health, and the employment, and the top needs in each of those categories. So we had 617 responses for the housing domain. Out of the adult responses, they indicated affordable subsidized housing, rent assistance, and move-in cost assistance were their top three needs overall. And then for youth, again, affordable and subsidized housing, rent assistance, but also finding a housing to rent. So if you are a youth, unaccompanied, and you do not have an emancipation, you can't sign a legal document, so you can't find housing.
And we don't ask the question, why are you not living with your family?
No, we didn't go into that much detail. It was a struggle. There's a whole lot of more information we really wanted to get, but we were already at six pages on our survey, and we wanted to, if you go much longer, people just aren't going to fill out the survey. So it was a balancing act.
So an 18-year-old that's still in school, the most important thing is for them to stay in school. But it's hard for me to sort out in this. An 18-year-old that wishes they had affordable housing and rent assistance.
I know when, a lot of them. This is
well,
under 18. That's under 18 responses. Those are the ones that aren't 18 yet, so they can't. They might be on their own, but they can't sign any legal documents.
And it could be the parent identifying that as a need for their children also.
Okay, so... at age 18, do we consider that adult?
Yes, for the purposes
so the
of this survey.
Of whether they're adult or not is age 18.
Correct, for this survey, yes.
So, I think I'm worried that nobody responded that they need education or job training.
So that's in a different category.
Yes.
Okay.
It's yes. Yes. Oh, this is only about housing here.
All right.
Yeah. These were responses specific to housing.
I see.
Any other questions about this one?
Okay. And employment is the next category.
Health and social behavioral.
Oh.
That was the second category identified as having a lot of needs. 604 responses said they needed something in the lines of health and social behavioral health. The top three were exactly the same between adults and youth, which was unusual. And so that was interesting to see that. Seeing a dentist was not surprising. It's been a trend in the previous surveys that we've done in the past. We did expect it to go down after the passage of the Affordable Care Act. What we suspect is that there's not very many dental providers that take Medicaid, and if they do, they're months out. And so we feel that we believe that that is the reason seeing a dentist is still high.
And I think you're probably onto something there. My good friend of mine and neighbor is retired now, but he was a pediatric dentist, and he was one of the few that took Medicaid.
Yeah. It's very difficult to find.
The other stat I think I've heard is that one of the top emergency room visits is because of a toothache.
Yeah.
And this is the need, right?
Correct. They identified
it. I may need food assistance, but I may be getting it, but I still need it.
Yes.
And
yes.
Not without it.
Right.
So a note about the food assistance, we worked with our partners, and the food bank was a fantastic partner. There's 36 pantries across Clark County. Out of the 1,600 responses that we received, over 400 identified that they came from or knew about the survey because of the food bank. So we had a research agency review the data and look for bias. They said they indicated a very slight bias in this food category for the responses, but not enough to skew any of the data. And when we go back to basic logic, if you're at the food bank looking for food, it's obviously a need. One of the other surprising things about this category for me was the need for exercise and fitness classes. For people living in poverty, they're dealing with crises almost on a daily basis, to be thinking about something as a wellness and moving into the future, I thought was interesting when they had the opportunity to choose paying for doctor visits or mental health services or drug substance abuse services. Those rose above.
So if we can go back to seeing the dentist.
Yes.
So it's not that there is not a financial mechanism for that cost because it's covered under Medicaid. It's that we don't have enough dentists that take Medicaid patients.
It's a combination. So the Affordable Care Act is the dental assistance under the Affordable Care Act is kind of confusing, and you have to meet different levels. You have to put in so much of your own funding before it really kind of kicks in. It's very confusing, and I don't know it very well, but so that's a piece of it.
So when we can get this kind of issue identified, and maybe we're only Clark County, but probably not, we're not the only county, how do we give information upstream where other decisions are made, either at the state or to the feds, to indicate either clarity or a way to help support more dentists taking Medicaid patients? Because this isn't going to go away unless we kind of fix this upstream. So is there a way to communicate upstream?
So one very small way that we have is we've sent this community needs assessment to all of our elected officials up the chain, so that including Jamie Herrera Butler and Senator Murray, and then have invited them to or have asked, if they would like us to do a presentation about this, then I'm more than happy to meet with them so that we can specifically call out some of these needs that we are being identified. The Clark County Dental Association is also quite aware of the problem, and I know they've been having conversations about it. I'm not sure what advocacy they're doing on that, on behalf of that, but I know there's been conversations regarding this issue.
There's appropriate remuneration to the dentist, though, or they can't stay in business.
Yes.
I mean, that's the issue. They're not paid enough in order to be able to manage their practices if they only take or they specialize in Medicaid patients.
With the last survey, with dental needs being so high, there was an agency that actually came in for funding. We funded them for a couple of years. Unfortunately, the agency wasn't able to survive on the Medicaid payment, so they've unfortunately no longer do Medicaid services. But that was one of the partners that we created based on the needs assessment that we had done previously. But yes, they can't. They can't afford to do it based on Medicaid alone.
Well, and malpractice insurance alone, which the dentist has a lot of operating costs mm-hmm. themselves, and they could be overwhelmed with Medicaid mm-hmm. clients if they take them. So yeah. I'm sure they limit the number based on that.
They do.
So my suggestion wasn't to strong arm the dentists. It's to just identify these mm-hmm. problems and give the information to people that can be looking for solutions.
Yes. And with this needs assessment, that's one piece of it, is we want to get the information out there about the needs so that people will have the conversations so that we can move forward in providing services that are based on what needs are actually being identified by our low-income households right here in Clark County. Any other questions? So the third top one was employment, and we're not surprised by this. When we look at the adult responses, it's getting a better job, which would indicate that they have a job and they just need something better, more hours or higher pay, along with finding a job, and then items to become or remain employed. And this comes up pretty often. There's a lot of services out there that don't provide this. So this would be like steel-toed boots so that you could start your construction job, or having your ID or birth certificate so that you can actually apply and obtain employment. And then for youth, finding jobs specifically for youth, along with child care. So that's a big one. You go to work, you need some place for your children to go, especially if they're not in school. Child care costs are very high, and there's a break-even point that we miss because we're paying so much for child care
services.
That's
an under 18 parent.
And
that's a parent that's under 18 years old.
So it would be both. So it would be right. The parents talking about they need child care for their children, and then it would be, unaccompanied that have their own children. So I talked in the beginning about the partner participation that we did to get the survey out there and notifications. We did a couple of steps in this, the full survey or the full community needs assessment. The first part was the survey of needs, which is the bulk of our the survey and the needs assessment that we have. We worked with over 65 community partners and in broad ranges of partners, so not just nonprofit agencies, but faith-based organizations, the private sector, and other government agencies. We did the public service announcements, and then staff attended a myriad of community meetings to let people know that the survey was available and to distribute copies of the survey. We then took all of this information that's from the survey, and we did a community feedback forum back in May of last year. And to get the information out about that, we did more public service announcements, again, went to a myriad of community meetings, and then we went to each and every council, local government council, and invited them to attend. All right. There's a whole lot more in the needs assessment that we didn't go over today, but we thought we would talk more about who filled out the survey in this presentation for you. But it's Michael and I put this whole thing together, and we really do hope that it's read and distributed. We've distributed over 800 copies of the community needs assessment since the beginning of the year, and I've done about 10 different presentations on the needs assessment, the full needs assessment, with about 5 more scheduled right now. And I'm happy to come to any groups and talk about this just to get the word out so people know that, because this is important to really make sure people are aware of what the needs are here in Clark County.
What types of groups do you typically go to present?
I've gone to several. So I've gone to a few board meetings, like sheriff's board meetings, and I've gone to the Leadership Clark County group, and I've presented there. I'm scheduled to present at both the Evergreen and the Vancouver faith-based coffees, so we can get bring the information back to the faith-based organizations that helped us with the survey, along with I have a presentation scheduled with the Economic Development Council. Yes. The schools were a great partnership. The Family Community Resource Centers, the Homeless School Liaisons, they were a great partner.
So, City of Vancouver, how are we communicating with them? Because we're finding more and more, they're discovering more and more needs or more formally identifying needs. How would you see what's going on in the City of Vancouver? And has anyone communicated with you about the assessment? And
yes.
And commented on it?
So the Community Action Advisory Board is the one, the advisory board that oversees the funding that the community needs assessment is a requirement of. And we had a task force of a few members of the Community Action Advisory Board, which included Councillor Ty Stober. So he was very involved in the creation of the survey to the actual creation of the full report. So yes, they were very involved in this.
And do we have a counselor that sits on this?
Lori Lebowski is the current counselor that's on the advisory board. Yes.
Do we have a county counselor sitting on this?
We do not. Not currently at this time. But we actually are hoping to expand the board, and then we'll be able to open up and have more involvement.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.